Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting the film series Testigo Witness, Goya in the Movies. Held on select Fridays in May, each film touches upon artist Francisco de Goya's visions of the world, kicking off with Pan's Labyrinth by Guillermo del Toro on May 10th at NortonSimon.org.
You have the chance to win a spring super sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
It's Film Week on KPECC. Well, sadly, the pandemic forced us to press pause on our LA-centric screening series at the Theater at Ace Hotel. But the good news is we've started a virtual series called Film Week and Chill. We'll bring together a group of people to talk about different beloved movies. We kicked off the series with one of my favorites, The Incredibles. Director Brad Bird and composer Michael Giacchino joined along with our own critics, Claudia Puig and Charles Solomon. Here's part of that conversation. Brad Bird, thank you for joining us. How'd you come up with the idea for the family of superheroes?
Well, it started with another project where I had a sort of a fantastical character that was past his prime. And then I started thinking about what if a superhero was past his prime? And at the time, I was trying to break into movies. I was working on The Simpsons, but I was really trying to get into movies. And I had all this anxiety. I also had a new family. And I had all this anxiety of being bad at either being a dad or not being able to get into the movie business. In other words, if I got a break in the movie business, if I threw myself into it completely, I might be a bad dad. And if I was a good father, then how could I give the movie attention it deserves? So that pull between work and family is definitely in the film.
Well, and also the sensibility of the film, the era, it's like 60s futuristic. Where did that idea come from?
When you experience something as a child, it kind of sears its way into your DNA. And that's everything I thought was cool when I was a kid. I thought Johnny Quest was cool. I thought James Bond was cool. I thought the music was cool. I thought the clothes were cool. The gadgets were cool. The enemies were cool. And so this was kind of all of that put together.
Michael Giacchino, thank you for being with us. So when you and Brad first talked about the idea for this and the sound of The Incredibles, how did Brad describe what he was looking for?
Well, I remember when I went up to Pixar for the first time, which was a really strange experience because, you know, I was going into this place that I didn't have a job. I didn't have the job yet. I was just going to meet Brad and they were going to show me some clips from the film. And then Brad and I were going to talk about it. And I remember very specifically, you know, we started talking about animation because I'm a huge animation nerd. I love it so much. It was actually one of the things I wanted to be as a kid was an animator. But we started talking about animation and then Johnny Quest came up in the conversation and we were supposed to be there talking about The Incredibles and what this could mean and what is this, how important this job could be, blah, blah, blah. We just like went on this tangent about Johnny Quest and how much we love Johnny Quest. And then we started talking about Hoyt Curtin, who wrote the music for Johnny Quest, and how much I loved him and how much Brad loved him. And we just immediately hit it off and it was really fun. And Brad's like, well, that's what I want this to sound like. I want this to sound like that. And I'll never forget one of the things he said was, I want kids running out of this theater, like screaming this theme song, you know, and pretending that they're these people from this movie. So we need to give them that energy that shows like Johnny Quest, James Bond, Henry Mancini stuff, all of that. You know, we wanted to just take all those things he and I both love, mash them all together.
And Michael, let's listen to that because you were kind enough to invite me to one of the days of the scoring session at Sony Studios. This was for Incredibles 2, but the music, of course, very similar to what was in the first film. Let's listen to this take on the closing credits.
Thank
So there you get. So that's just my phone recording it. But the energy, the power you were talking about, it's there.
Well, and if you know what, why that is, it's because everyone in the orchestra is there in that room playing together. You know, nowadays they do this thing called tracking and they record everyone separately. And it does, you know, it can have a good effect to some extent, but it misses that sort of soul that happens, that thing that happens when everyone is together doing something. And that just made me really miss it. We haven't done that in well over a year now because of everything. But yeah, that's amazing.
Claudia Puig, I want to ask you about the characters in the film, the voice performances, the characterizations. One of the things I love about this is how much we identify with characters that are superheroes.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, and I think we identify with it at least one and possibly more. You know, everyone's been a kid or been an awkward, you know, teenager, you know, embarrassed. And I particularly loved the Helen character. Holly Hunter's voice was so great. And I just felt like she was such a multidimensional developed character, and we see so few of women in any kind of movie, animated or live action, that are really well developed. So she was like my favorite character. But everybody got to have their moment too. It was like everybody in the family, you know, even down to Jack-Jack. I mean, everybody, it was such an ensemble piece. And I love the characters.
Well, and the clip that we showed, you know, with her arms stretching around the table to grab it, what mom doesn't in some way, you know, relate to that?
You're stretched thin, right? You're stretched and you're trying to do a million things. And that's the thing that's so great about that character too, is that she's, you know, grounded, she's smart, she's funny, she's capable. That thing she says where she, you know, like women can save the world or whatever, at the very beginning when she's being interviewed. She just reaches out and handles everything. She's so great. I love her.
Charles, I wanted to ask you about the look of the Incredibles characters, because this was a big breakthrough for Pixar.
Well, The Incredibles is not only a good film and one that I like very much, having been following Brad since Amazing Stories, but it is a very important film, really a watershed film in animation history. This is when Brad and his artists showed that the way to bring CG characters to life on the screen is not to make them more realistic, as they had tried to do in films like Shrek and the early Toy Stories, where you get these kind of waxworks automatons that are so creepy, but rather to look back to the classic animation of Disney and Warner Brothers. By making them cartoonier, they come to life in a way that no human character had in CG before. And since then, everyone has copied it, and not just the artist at Pixar learning from him, Disney, DreamWorks, Blue Sky, everybody copied The Incredibles the way they used to copy the old Disney silly symphonies, that this is what we learn from. Here's how to do it. This works. And it's a groundbreaking film in that sense.
Also want to talk about Brad's previous film to this, The Iron Giant, which is to me a classic film, but it was not a box office success, despite what a great film it was artistically. But that, of course, a 2D film. And here Brad takes on the challenge of, you know, doing the tech conversion to 3D computer animation.
Well, the Iron Giant himself was CG. The humans weren't. But that was a film that broke all the critics and animators' hearts, because we said, this could be our Dumbo. This is the movie we wanted to make. This is the movie audiences said they want to see. Why isn't anybody going to it?
Yeah, Brad, that had to be extremely disheartening, coming out of a film that's that great, but the audience doesn't come out to see it. Where were you creatively and career-wise coming out of that film?
I have a different viewpoint of it now, because I think part of the reason we were able to do what we did is because the studio really wasn't paying attention to us, which was great in many ways. As long as we stayed on a very tight budget, which was very hard, they kind of let us make the movie.
More about Film Week and Chill in our conversation to come, as we hear more about The Incredibles right after this.
Welcome
Welcome back to Film Week. I'm Larry Mantle. It's Film Week and Chill, our new series of virtual events with our critics and filmmakers. Our first installment featuring one of my favorites, The Incredibles. Let's get right back to the conversation. We begin with this clip featuring supersuit designer Edna Mode.
Yes, things are going quite well, My God, no complaints. But, you know, it is not the same, at all.
Weren't you just in the news, some show in Prague?
Milan, darling, Milan. Supermodels. Nothing super about them, spoiled, stupid little stick figures with poofy lips who think only about themselves. I used to design for gods. But perhaps you come with a challenge, eh? I was surprised to get your call.
I just need a pass job.
This is mega mesh, outmoded, but very sturdy, and you've torn right through it. What have you been doing, Robert? Moonlighting hero work?
Must have happened a long time ago.
I see. This is a hobo suit, darling. You can't be seen in this. I won't allow it. 15 years ago, maybe, but now...
What do you mean? You designed it.
I never look back, darling. It distracts from the now.
Claudia, I want to ask you about Edna Mode, because when I saw the screening at the El Capitan for the first time, the audience just laughed so heartily. That character... even if people were not familiar with who Edith Head was or, you know, big Hollywood designers, they understood what that character represents.
I love her. I love that. I remember I went back and looked at my review of the movie. And one of the things I said was, Edna needs her own spinoff. And I would like to see a full movie. I know there's been a short that Brad didn't direct, but just the eccentricities. I love that, because I kept trying to place the accent. I'm going, is it German, is it Japanese? And I think I read somewhere that it was both. Is that right, Brad?
Yeah, Brad, how did you find the voice artist for that role?
Well, it was the only one that was really cheap and really available all the time. So.
Seriously, how did you end up doing it yourself?
Well, I would fall into that voice when I was describing her to people, and I went to I actually went to Lily Tomlin and met with her, and she was going to record it, but she kept asking me to do the voice again, like, tell me how it goes again. And then she asked me to record the entire part into her tape recorder and leave it, which I thought was very strange. And so I did. And she called the next week and she said, I've been working at it, but I think you do it better. And right at the same time, we had internal screenings. And both John Lasseter and Andrew Stanton, the other directors at Pixar and creative heads of Pixar, said that I should do the voice. And so I just said, okay, you know, I mean, it's weird, but okay, you know, and there you go. There it is.
We have Christian, who is joining us from Atlanta. Christian, thanks very much. Question for you, Michael. Wondering what challenge you faced when composing the score for the sequel.
It was funny because for a long time, and Brad will tell you this, I was like, no, don't make a sequel. That's it. Boom, you're done. You did that. It's great. Why do we always have to have like 2, 3, 4 of everything? You know, let's just make one good thing. Part of me doing that was that I was afraid to kind of go back and try and jump into those shoes again. I mean, that was my first movie that I did. And as much fun as I had, it was also, you know, somewhat traumatizing at the time, some part in due to Brad, because when I first got the job, we were on the phone and he was like, all right, you know, you got the job. And I was like, really? He goes, yeah, you got the job. You know, it's gonna, I was like, oh man, thank you. That's so great. I'm so excited. He goes, hold on. I just want to say one thing. And he goes, your music could ruin my movie. I was like, I'm like,
no pressure.
I'm like, yeah. Wait, what is this a job? Didn't you say I got the job? Anyway, he goes, and he goes, now what I mean by that is that if, you know, if your music is not in lockstep with my story, then the audience is going to start thinking things that we don't want them to think. They're going to start, you know, their mind's going to go places we don't want it to go. So you and I have to be hand in hand this whole time, no matter what. It's always about the story, which I was a huge believer of anyway, coming up to this point. But it was such a great thing to hear, actually, because it's been ringing through my head ever since. And so coming back to the second movie, I thought of that. And I remember thinking like, okay, lockstep with the story. And of course, that movie was slightly different production schedule. It was a little more, it was a little more crazy because it had to get done in a much shorter time period than the first one did.
Jen in Emeryville, wondering for Brad, how you came up with all of Jack's powers in the first film and then expanded on them in the second.
Well, the idea behind that very quickly is like the rest of the family, where you go with archetypes, and men are the heads of the families. When men are the heads of the families, they're always expected to be strong. Mother figures are pulled many different ways at once, and are kings of multitasking. So having her stretch was good. You know, teenagers are insecure, so her powers are invisibility. Babies are unknowns. They could possibly be imbued with more powers than have ever been seen before. So I had Jack be a polymorph, meaning that his body sort of hasn't decided what his powers are yet. You know, the fact that babies, you can put them in a deep end of a pool and they know how to swim because they haven't forgotten the inside of the womb, and they can grasp languages very quickly. And there's just something, you know, amazingly versatile about babies. So that was the idea. And when I had the first film, I needed, if it got too plot heavy, I needed something to cut to spark things up. And I thought leaving that kind of baby with a babysitter would be something to cut to. But when we filled out the story that we were doing had so much momentum by itself that I didn't need to cut to the babysitter. So we ended up doing the babysitter as a little extra film that went onto the DVD. And so I had this unexploded bomb of Jack that the family didn't know about. The audience knew about his multiple powers, but they didn't. And that was a big sort of thing in the second movie.
Charles, closing thought from you.
Well, with Incredibles, Ratatouille, and Iron Giant, Brad has made three of the great animated films, and that's not of his generation, of the last decades. 80 years later, we're still talking about Pinocchio and Dumbo and Bambi. And I think in 80 years, people will still be talking about The Iron Giant and Incredibles and Ratatouille, because they are great films and great animated films.
My thanks to director Brad Bird, composer Michael Giacchino, and our terrific Film Week critics Charles Solomon and Claudia Puig. Our first Film Week and Chill virtual event. You can see the whole thing, the video of it and all. It's available at kpecc.org on our Film Week page. You can also see it by going to kpecc.org/in-person, where you'll get updates on our future ones as well. Have a great weekend.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.